And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and it's my pleasure to welcome back Ashton Lee, the author of the Cherry Cola Book Club novels. Ashton's latest in the series is The Queen of the Cookbooks and is published by Kensington. It's an exciting time in Greater Jericho as the new state-of-the-art Charles Durden Sparks Crumpton and Dudney Library is set to open. Scheduled for the 4th of July, the opening includes fireworks and a concert by country superstar Waddell Mack. Mara Beth decides it will be fun to add some food to the festivities, and the Queen of the Cookbooks contest is launched, along with unplanned fireworks of a different kind. Even Mara Beth's careful planning can't prevent all the glitches, and there's always someone who doesn't agree with what should and shouldn't be on the library shelves. Ashton, it's good to have you back in Memphis. And I was just telling someone, I'm ready to move to Jericho.
Are you?
The life seems a lot simpler there, and the people seem a little bit nicer. Mm-hmm. And plus, you have this wonderful new state-of-the-art library. Mm-hmm. How long has she been working on this?
Well, she's been there for 7 years.
Okay.
Our librarian, Mara Beth Mayhew. And she's been in Jericho in this awful, dark, windowless library for about that long. And not only is it inadequate, but the powers that be have been trying to shut it down. So she's worked for about 7 years, given 7 years of her young career to trying to make a decent library for the citizens of Jericho, and now it's coming true.
It sounds fabulous, and she's got all of these big plans, but as we all know, sometimes the best laid plans don't always work. And she and Jeremy, her husband, took a trip and got an inspiration to do something different at the opening from the BTC Grocery?
Yes, the BTC Old Fashioned Grocery and Dixie Belle Cafe in Water Valley, Mississippi. Doesn't that sound Southern?
It does.
And they stumbled upon it when they'd gotten off the Natchez Trace Parkway. They were just out for a weekend drive, and she had seen a previous article about this little hometown grocery that sold produce on the shelves, and they even told you who created the produce. It was Miss Lily's cucumbers and Patsy's squash, and it's charming, and I decided I had to check it out because it sounded like the sort of Mississippiana that I might want to include in my series because I do like to feature the state of Mississippi. Although I've done a pretty good job of featuring the Mid-South, like Memphis as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
And I went down there to Water Valley, and I walked into the BTC Old Fashioned Grocery, and it was as advertised. Not only did they have fresh produce and fresh eggs and fresh pork, but they had all sorts of frozen casseroles, and they had a wonderful lunch and dinner menu with some wonderful, what I'd say that would be gourmet sandwiches with a Southern touch. I was convinced then, and I went to the owners, and I said, do you mind if I include a large portion of my first chapter of my fifth novel in this establishment? And they said, oh, well, we'd love that. And so, as a matter of fact, I had a book signing there on Wednesday, the November 30th, and some of the citizens of Water Valley came up and bought the books and talked to me about being a writer, and I had a wonderful time down there. They had some wonderful chicken salad and some spicy Tex-Mex type pimento cheese with a kick to it, and people would help themselves to that and crackers, and I had a wonderful signing down there.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And Mara Beth, she saw their cookbook and decided that that would be an element that she could include in her grand opening. But as she said, it sort of opened Pandora's box of recipes, which I love the way that she said that.
You like that, and that's mm-hmm. true, and it did that. The opening of the new library, which, by the way, is on a lake with a deck overlooking a lake, and that's Lake Jericho, which in my mind is Pickwick Lake, which we all know about. Anyway, that's the location of the library. So they're going to have a 4th of July fireworks display. They're going to have a country music concert by my made-up country music flashing star, Waddell Mack. Doesn't that sound like a real country star?
Absolutely.
And then Mara Beth decides that she's going to have a cooking contest to further bring people into the library opening. Food tents, tasting tents, and to sweeten the pot, there are going to be cash prizes. There's going to be an award for best appetizer, best entree, best dessert, and the overall best dish voted on by the people that try them will become the queen of the cookbooks and get a $5,000 cash prize.
And I said earlier that the people in Chirico always seem a little bit nicer, but unfortunately you have some outsiders come in to enter the contest. These girls from Corinth. That's Do you think there would have been the problems if you had just had Chirico people?
Maybe, but and I don't mean to imply that people in Corinth are like that. You just have to borrow what you need, and these two great rivals as cooks from Corinth decide that they're going to come down to Chirico for the library opening and win that money. And there is no limitation. You don't have to be from Chirico to enter it. And so they are quite the rivals, and they sign up for the contest. And they're not really content, you know, to let the other win. They're going to maybe try to do something about that.
And although that's funny, it just reminded me how particular people are when it comes to their cooking and how competitive that they can be. Mm-hmm. Bit, and I'm trying to remember her full name because it's quite lengthy. Isn't she on her fourth marriage or
something like that? And I think her current name may be Bit Sessions, if I recall.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yes.
And she decides that the other cook, Gwen Beatles, mm-hmm. she needs to have a cookbook called something about hubris because she has all the heavenly desserts.
Oh, yes. Gwen definitely thinks that she's sent from heaven to cook for the masses or her family, whichever. I don't know which. But, yes, she is determined that her rival will not win this. And so they kind of cook up schemes. I don't want to do any spoilers, though, you know.
No, absolutely. But I did like, and you have done since the beginning, have included the recipes.
Yes.
So that if anybody is interested. Mm-hmm. And one of them that I was really curious about is the no sugar added one. Mm-hmm. How did you find that?
I was at a book signing and book talk in Perry, Florida, the panhandle down there. And there is a couple there. He's from the United Kingdom, and she's American, but she married him, and it turned out that many of these libraries will fix recipes from the books for these events, or they will add their own as additional choices. And this particular fan of mine, this reader of mine, came up to me and just said, "Now this looks like cherry pie, but it's more like cherry cake, and it's all no sugar added, and I'm a diabetic. And don't you think it tastes good?" And I did taste it, and I said, you know what? I'm going to put this as one of my recipes in my new novel. And she said, well, you definitely have my permission. So a lot of times I get ideas, anecdotes, and even recipes from my readers as I travel, librarians as I travel. And I do have a T-shirt. I don't have it on now, but it says, "Careful or you'll end up in my novel." That happens a lot to people who come to my signings and talk to me.
And Mary Bell Pleasant says it best. She says, "You don't feel like you're being punished for your sugar sin." And as the book points out, we do have a problem with diabetes here in the mm-hmm. South. And so this is an opportunity. And I really like the new characters that you've added.
Thank you.
She was a good one. And then Anna Estrella, mm-hmm. who's come with Spurs R Us as mm-hmm. the new publicist, mm-hmm. I guess.
Right. She's public relations.
And she also includes a recipe.
Right. Anna Estrella is the result of another one of my reader fans. There is a young woman named Ana Raquel Ruiz, who is from Atlanta, Georgia, and she has come to every one of my Atlanta signings. She is a nutritionist and a cook, and she does all sorts of demonstrations. And she is originally from Puerto Rico, and she now lives in Atlanta. And I was so impressed with her loyalty that I said, you know, Ana, I think what I'm going to do is create an Hispanic character for my Chirico universe, which I don't have one. I have blacks and whites and young and old and all that, but I think I'll have a Latino come in, and I will base her on you. And Ana, in the novel, contributes a pigeon peas cake for dessert, and that is a favorite dessert of Puerto Rican people. I had not heard of it before.
I hadn't either, but I'm dying to try it. Mm. I mean, I just hope I can find pigeon peas in the local grocery store. Although I did look online, and Goya is one of the brands that
they are. And I was wondering if a place like Whole Foods might have it, or it would be in the ethnic foods aisle of a large supermarket. But I was very intrigued by it, and apparently it takes a little extra to fix it. because people think, well, how can something savory end up being sweet? But that is the case.
And it sounds like it's awfully moist as well, so I'm sure it'll be really good. At one point, you described the library as a cathedral of knowledge and a repository of our culture. Do you see the internet and technology taking that over, or are the small libraries always going to be there?
Well, that is, I think, a central conflict of the millennium, because there are people who rely upon what I would call instant gratification technology. They have smartphones. They have a great deal of business and personal communication that they conduct on these smartphones, and they download a great deal. But that's still not the same as having a building where you have classic literature, you have a spectrum of our culture, not just American culture, but the Western culture or the culture of the world. And I think that a physical brick-and-mortar building, a place where people can go, they can relax, they can do their research, and it's not a function of technology, though they can use the computer terminals. Libraries genuinely are the repositories of our culture for the past, the present, and I know they are preparing us for what's to come. So I don't see a physical building being replaced by a downloadable universe of technology. That's what I would like to think.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say, and I don't mean to point this at anyone, but I'm always amazed when I do see people walking across an intersection and just using their thumbs and looking down at this little, they're not looking at traffic. They're not interacting with their environment. And I think perhaps we've gone a little bit too far in making communication, not about communication, but just convenience. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but I agree with your central premise that there is a conflict between continuing technology and the need for a physical building versus, let's say, a kiosk.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can just go in and swipe a chip or do something like that. I don't really know where we're headed with technology, but I will always defend a brick-and-mortar library system.
Well, and I feel that way about bookstores, too, because
yes.
I feel like that we've gotten away from that, and that's a part of our culture that, you know, is just so needed.
I definitely feel that way. I am a big fan of independent bookstores, particularly because they are run by people that have a great deal of interest in the writers whose books they buy. They keep up with reviews, they keep up with new writers and what they have to say, and they can make wonderful recommendations to you, as can librarians when you walk in. They have a new bookshelf, or you just may say, I'm looking for someone new. Maybe this is the genre I'm looking for. Tell me something about a new writer on the scene. So, as you can tell, I'm a great believer in literacy and reading, as well as the classics, but there are new writers out there like myself. And I will say that all of my novels have technological versions. I mean, they're ebooks. You can download them on Kindle and Nook. There's an unabridged audio. And then there's a large print version, which is a print version. And so I don't begrudge any of these versions because it gets the printed word, so to speak, out to more people. And that's fine. And no writer wants fewer readers or wants to say,
I only want
my books published on paper. You embrace all technology in that way, and you embrace all readers. And I have readers who will come and say, well, it's really convenient for me to download your book. My only surprise was it didn't really have a picture of you, and your name was Ashton Lee, and I thought you were a woman. And I said, that's perfectly fine. I have been told that I write women well, and that's actually a compliment. And my publisher, Kensington, New York, asked me to create a pen name that was androgynous because their research tells them that, particularly if you write women characters well and mm-hmm. they figure in your plots, that women are more comfortable actually buying books by writers who have androgynous pen names or female pen names versus male pen names.
Because we tend to believe that it's better if it's our own gender, I guess.
I guess so. And I have a point to make about that comment, and that is that if you are a good writer and a true writer and you're driven, like I am, to communicate with people, you should be able to write anyone, all genders, races, social classes. You should be able to have enough empathy and or do enough research to put yourself in the shoes of just about anybody. And a classic example of that would be that I have really never heard anybody criticize Harper Lee's creation of Atticus Finch as a man. Now, they have said he's too perfect. I've heard that before, that he's a lawyer and he doesn't seem to have any faults and flaws, and I would disagree with that. But the fact is, a female writer should be able to write men, and a male writer should be able to write women, and anything else.
Well, you said being able to put yourself into the other person's shoes. The people that were in this book, particularly, that I couldn't really get into, and that's Renette's parents, the Poseys. There's a deeper meaning here than just the Queen of the Cookbooks.
Correct.
There's the talk about what should and should not be on the library shelves. And Renette works at the library with Mara Beth, loves Mara Beth, really admires her. But her parents really have a problem with that because they've seen her change. How do you help people understand why something is on a library shelf, even though they may disagree with that, like the Poseys did?
That's right. And to put that in focus, I really feel that any library is the first line of defense in any community against censorship of any kind. Because once you allow anyone, any group, no matter what their religious, political views are or any other views, to say, I don't want that book on the shelf, you have to take it off. That's not what a library is about. A library is about presenting a world and a universe of information to people and letting them choose what they want to read and what they want to learn about. And in this particular novel, Renette Posey is a very naive, sweet teenage front desk clerk who's been working many years with Mara Beth, who is pretty much her role model. And because Mara Beth has recommended certain books to her, she has discovered a new world. Her parents, and I'm not pointing any specific fingers here, but they belong to a very strange church that does not want her to leave home until she's married. And they almost want to pick her husband for her. They don't want her to date, and they don't want her to do this, so she's very repressed. And one of the interesting conflicts and subplots in this novel that you've talked about, it's not just about the cookbook contest. Renette has developed this mad crush on the country western singer Waddell Mack. And she wants to be, of all things, a groupie. She wants to go from one extreme to the other. Without letting her parents know, she sneaks out to attend the concert. And we don't want to do spoilers here, but she puts herself in harm's way when she pretends to be something she's not. She gets way over her head. And you might read into this that perhaps this happens if people are too repressed, if people are not allowed to have access to enough of the real world to understand how it works. And then they might set them up to become victims of people that are unscrupulous. So that plot is in there. I think I balance it. But at the same time, to get back to your question of library censorship, the Poseys, her parents, organize a picket of the library because they actually think Mara Beth is running the town now because she can pick and choose anything that's on the shelf, and they disagree with some of it. They start off, let's just go, opposing Harry Potter because it's about witchcraft. That's what they say. And so if you think, if they're willing to not accept that, then what else won't they accept? I mean, the whole library shelves would be fair game for them. And you cannot allow people to just willy-nilly pull books off the shelf. Some librarians they're called challenges. And the librarian must defend why he or she bought that book. Sometimes that can get messy. But a lot of communities don't have that. In larger cities, you have branches that are designed for certain demographics in that neighborhood, and usually the patrons are very pleased with what's there. So, my goodness, you can tell I'm a library defender, can't you?
That's quite all right. That's what it's all about. That's what the whole Cherry Cola book series is about, and defending libraries. But Mara Beth in this situation has to go before everybody and defend what's going on with this. But as always, her Cherry Cola Book Club comes through for her.
Right.
They help her with furniture for the grand opening when it doesn't come. And then they also help her get through this crisis of being picketed right after the grand opening.
That little furniture episode is kind of funny. It turns out that she had, of course, ordered the library furniture on time. instead of going to Jericho, Mississippi, it had gone to Jericho, Missouri. Apparently, some people don't know their state abbreviations as well as they should. So it doesn't arrive quite in time, and her Cherry Cola Book Club friends contribute what they can, and it's kind of a hodgepodge. It's kind of humorous. You have couches that have gathered dust and high stools and low chairs, but people are so overwhelmed by the structure of this library. It is, has high ceilings, lots of light, overlooking the lake, and they have all these computer terminals, and they have a new children's room, a brand new children's librarian. They've never had these things before, and they're just all blown away, so they don't care that they might have to sit on a strange-looking chair for a day or two.
Well, I thought it was kind of charming when you think about a small-town library, which this is not a small-town library anymore. Mm-mm. This is a really state-of-the-art.
No, it's not.
It seats 400 in their auditorium, you know, it's on the lake, and you can do pretty much anything there.
That's right. So I consider it to be the triumph of my character from beginning to end. When you first meet her, she's very naive in dealing with Southern politicians, good old boys. And she has not anticipated the resistance to her and her position. And so throughout the series, and this is the fifth of six, there's another coming. And that book, by the way, is called Book Club Babies, which should indicate to you that some people are getting pregnant. And you watch her grow as a woman and as a librarian. And you're very happy for her, but you see her, it's not a silver spoon thing. She has all these challenges just to work her way through them. And I remember one particular book club, I won't say where they were, they read the first book, the Cherry Cola Book Club, and they said, well, we don't want to have to read any more of this. Why can't you put this all in one book? And I said, nobody's going to want to read a 1,200-page book.
Right. And this way you get a small dose at a time. I said, I like going back to Jericho because it seems a lot nicer. I've decided I want to move there and I want to go to this library.
It is a nice place. But you have to admit, because Linda, you've read all the books, that there are problems. These people are not problem free. They have their challenges. Some are financial, some are health, some are emotional. And they get through them, but not by themselves. The Cherry Cola Book Club really becomes an alternative family, which we'd all like to think a community could become. And you're right, that may be a little idealistic, maybe a little bit it's a wonderful life, but it really isn't, because I've drawn from real life. Many of these problems and stories have come from librarians themselves who've had to deal with these things, and I think they're very, very pleased that someone is talking about them in a flattering way and letting the general public know that, no, libraries are not free. No, you just don't wrinkle your nose like Elizabeth Montgomery and the books get on the shelf, that sort of thing. It's work. It's a dedicated work.
One of the things that I've noticed is that each one of the books in the series, in the Cherry Cola Book Club series, has a tagline. And the one on this one is, life's best stories are filled with surprises. What does that mean for the reader?
Well, it means that sometimes something that appears to be exactly right or promising may not be, and you may have to rethink it. There are several instances in which Maura Beth has everything going right. She's got the opening of the library, and she thinks that the cooking contest is just going to be a snap. But all of these people show up with all of these opinions, and some of them even talk about threats, and there's a little sabotage going on, and security guards have to get involved. So it's not quite the way she expected it to be. And also with the character of Renette Posey, here she is thinking that she's capable of doing all these risque things that her parents have warned her against. And they were right about that part, but what they weren't right about was making her think that the world was just a closed door and there was no light coming in from anywhere else and no other input was allowable. And so she puts herself in danger. So these are surprises that you can't always predict the outcome of things that appear to be safe, and you always have to be on guard and be alert. And then at the same time, you can't become cynical. You have to be open to experiences. So I guess that would be applicable to that particular phrase or tagline.
So you've already referred to the babies in the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to talk about Maura Beth's dream? the dream that she has at the beginning of the book that kind
yes,
of runs
that's
through
very, very interesting. Do you don't want me to do a spoiler, do you, all the way at the end?
No.
Okay. No, Marbeth, throughout this book, has a repetitive dream, which some of us have had from time to time, and she's always walking in a fog in this dream, and then she seems to break into a clearing, a clear space. But she always wakes up before she finds out what's in this sunlit clear space. And there are three or four different references to this. What can this possibly mean? And at the very, toward the very end of the book, the dream gets completed, and she sees what is in the sunlit opening, what's in the clearing. Something happens. There's a clue. I'm not saying whether it's audio or visual, but it happens, and she realizes what's going on, and she wakes Jeremy up, and I think it's a thought in her head. She says, so that's what this has been all about.
And I thought that was so appropriate for the book, because she has had to go through so much to get to this point, and it has been foggy. I mean, all of these problems that have creeped up, you know, all over the 7 years that she's been trying to get this new library and move them from a little, you know, I guess, like shack
into something. Ex-tractor warehouse.
Yeah, into something that they could really appreciate. Mm-hmm. So I really like the way that it opens up at the end and you do see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Mm. And so I look forward to the next one as well.
Thank you.
And we can go back to Chirico again.
Well, I'm glad that you are looking forward to that visit. I think this one is, I've been having a lot of fun writing this one too. And it kind of opened up some characters that have never been opened up before in a different way. So,
and do you think some of the new characters will stay with us? Because I know Bit has threatened to sue since she got kicked out of the cookbook contest.
I decided that Bit should go back to Clark.
Well, hopefully Anna Estrella will sue. How did you say it, Anna Estrella?
Yeah, in the Spanish, the trilling of the tongue, Anna Estrella.
Well, I hope she'll stick around for the next one.
That's good.
And just remember, you may end up in one of his books.
That's right. Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you. We've reached the end of our time for Book Talk today. I want to say thank you to our guest, Ashton Lee, the author of Queen of the Cookbooks, a new chapter in the Cherry Cola Book Club novels. We see how all Mara Best's hard work has come together to open the new library. As usual, though, only with the help of the Cherry Cola Book Club and a lot of luck can she manage the glitches. From food fights to naysayers calling Mara Beth a dictator and the library a threat to the innocence of Greater Chirico, the Queen of the Cookbooks attests to the power of loyal friendships. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752. You can find information on upcoming tapings and broadcasts of Book Talk, as well as download podcasts at our blog, WIPLFMBookTalk.blogspot.com.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WIPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.